Welcome to Markagy, the science of marketing strategy, a bi-weekly podcast where all the cool marketers discuss their favorite marketing strategies, study by study. On this show, we feature marketing risk takers who believe long-term wins for the customer equal long-term wins for the business too. How? Human-led marketing. The combination of where science, creativity, and strategy meet, or as we also like to call it, Markagy. Let's break down the marketing trends, myths, and methodologies together. I'm your host, Leanne Dalweimer. Let's go.
Hey there, this is Leanne with Markagy, and today I'm joined by Karina Owens. You probably know her, but I'm going to have her tell us a little bit about her background and what she's up to these days.
Hey, I'm so thrilled to be here. My name is Karina, and that, I have to talk about myself, sorry. My name is Karina. I mostly talk about account-based marketing. I've been a revenue marketer for the last 13 plus years, and I am currently a co-host of a podcast that I run with a former partner in crime of mine, Taylor Young, called Direct, where we feature and highlight the unsung heroes and go to marketing campaigns and organizations everywhere. And yeah, thrilled to be here.
Awesome. Thank you. I know we're both a little tongue-tied today, so I'll set a better example for the rest, I swear. So when we talked before, one of the things that really stood out to me was how you ended up in B2B SaaS. And I'd really like to hear more about kind of like where you started and like some of your steps along the way to get there.
Yeah, it's a non-conventional story, like I think most marketers have. I was actually set to become a teacher, and I taught abroad in Costa Rica for a little bit before coming back to the States and looking for a permanent spot to teach. It was during a recession, so there were absolutely no slots available. And I always had an inkling to do other things. Teaching is a big passion of mine. It shows up still in my life. I do, mentorships, and then I also teach aerial silks on the side. So it's very much interwoven into just like how I live and operate. But I always saw myself as kind of maybe doing my own thing, maybe being an entrepreneur. I've had lots of lofty dreams for myself. But I actually ended up doing some marketing work with a private equity firm. And it was a lot of communications with investors and then, you know, trying to solicit people to invest in our latest fund. And I found that I really just liked the marketing aspect of it and the art of how you can blend both like the ROI of something, but also the creativity aspect of it too. Because one of my lofty visions was to become a film director, and that's TBD. I still have hope that I will one day do that. But yeah, I took a chance on myself and just started to forge my own path for what that could look like. And that led myself from private equity to a global product company. And then that led me to more of that startup, which really lended itself to the tech SaaS space. And that's where I've been primarily in ever since.
Awesome. And I really want to like call out that, you know, you wanted to forge something for yourself. And I think that kind of not necessarily ownership, but that like idea of want for your own goals and, you know, not necessarily just taking someone's script and trying to live out a script. And I think that that's really powerful no matter what level or stage or industry or any of it you're in is thinking for yourself, what do I want? And maybe it's less intentional and you're just typing, you're like, oh, I think it'd be cool to do that, but still having those thoughts and giving them space. So during this process, as you saw what it took from a private equity perspective to get people to invest in funds, and then into SaaS, you've kind of carved out some space where you do a lot of things, but some of it is, being a generalist, being in the ABM area. Can you kind of expand on how you approach those things?
Yeah, I think that I've always had people try to put me in a box as a marketer. So for a long time, I was called a specialist. Because I invested, like I would come into a company, I would see that their SEO strategy was just really weak. And that was a channel that really needed to be optimized. So I just took it upon myself to kind of learn the nuts and bolts of it and prove some initial success. So for the longest time, I was considered a specialist. And then I became more of this generalist where I was coming in and optimizing different functions of demand generation programs and, you know, all the other areas of marketing. So I did, you know, have my hand in product marketing even as well and customer marketing. And really at the end of the day, these are all just principles, right? They're all just principles of marketing. Customer marketing is not so much different than account-based marketing, and demand generation is not, you know, so different across the board. It just depends on like your area of knowledge and different channels, et cetera. But at the end of the day, everything just comes back to really knowing the voice of your customer, and however you slice and dice it, it's just a way to market yourself and position yourself. And I did find myself really believing and buying into fundamentally just the principles of account-based marketing, which is just, I mean, just to put it very simply, it's just very specific, intentional marketing. And to me, most embodied, you know, what I found myself to be really strong in, which was alignment and cross-functional partnerships. I realized, like, because I was in startups, I was really just a team of one, or maybe just a team of one to three. And I realized just the value in the go-to-market organization when they all worked in tandem. So when everyone was aligned to a specific goal, when everyone had visibility to, you know, different data sets. And so account-based marketing principles just really lended itself well to that. So I've been adopting those philosophies in the last, you know, 3 to 4 organizations I've been at. And talking about it broadly, you know, because it's funny how things that are relatively simple in nature, we just end up as a society kind of convoluting things and making things more complicated and hard to grasp. We throw a bunch of acronyms and buzzwords at things, and then it just gets muddied. And I realized that account-based marketing was one of those things that people just weren't really talking about or really able to like successfully demonstrate what does it mean to build a account-based marketing program from scratch. What does it mean to scale it? So I just started talking about it, and thankfully that got me some attention, and I was able to show off my work.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point, talking about what it is and what it isn't, because that's a trap that like I personally am guilty of with ABM is, I'm like, oh, you know, like at face value and, you know, it's X, Y, and Z, but it depends on the practitioner, right? It really depends on the person and what they're doing. And, I think the way that you've gone about sharing like your work and your story and the things that you work on, kind of clarifies exactly what it is and isn't. One way to make it successful, and the potential like complexities that can be involved. You know, it's not just, yeah, here's a list of 10 people and we sent them some wine. Like that's not ABM. That's just sending gifts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess what I want to hear next is more about like, about that, like how maybe from like a strategic mindset, how you kind of approach it, you know, maybe some places where there are some risks associated with it that you kind of try to avoid.
Yeah. I mean, I really treat it very much like experimental marketing. You know, I think that sending wine and gifts is a tactic, and that's a tactic that can work really well, but you can't even get to the tactic stage until you know the ins and outs of what makes these customers and accounts that you're trying to attract tick. Like what are their challenges? What are their needs? What is, you know, at the individual level, like what helps them make their job better? What are their preferences, et cetera? So it's very much for me, it's about validating a go-to-market motion. And in many ways, if you treat it like that on the onset, so if you're at like tasked with building an account-based marketing program, it's all about asking the right questions. And of course, attempting to figure some of that out yourself too, but ensuring that you're asking the right questions and aligned to what could potential success look like and all the people involved that are going to be stakeholders in the program to get you there, because it's definitely not a single person effort. And I say it helps validate because I've been in many organizations where we have made assumptions that specific accounts and specific industries as a whole would be well fit for the company I'm representing. And rather than building a lot of custom software, a lot of custom changes to product development and, you know, partnerships, et cetera, there was a lot of positioning and messaging validation that we did and tested, which didn't involve a lot of technology and it didn't involve a lot of tools or even people. We just would pilot with what we had assumptions were going to be the right types of messaging and types of programs that would get traction. And then we validated and iterated along the way. But yeah, I would say that it's a really great strategy to validate and potentially accelerate revenue, right? But it's going to be a strategy first and foremost. And you can't get to a ton of tactics until you have some of that baked out on the front end.
Definitely. And I think, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot on this podcast specifically is being customer centric. Mm-hmm. And to me, there is no better way to be customer centric than to ask your customer questions. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise you're working in fiction, right? You're working in assumptions. And so I agree with you. And I've seen firsthand the power of testing things and piloting them before you make drastic changes that nobody wants. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that it doesn't just impact today's pipeline. It impacts the entire company's possibilities for the future when you do it methodically and strategically and not just spray and pray. Mm-hmm. Which can be a problem for some startups is not having that validation that this is our customer that we should go after.
Yeah. And I think so much of what you're saying just really resonates with me about what I'm hopeful is going to be like the future for B2B and specifically how we market in B2B organizations. I think so many startups just fail to, maybe they are speaking with their customers, but they don't have a rigor or a process around how do we collect feedback? How do we then work with that feedback? And then what are we doing with that feedback? Like I've yet to be in an organization that has that feedback loop set up and ready to go. And there would be these amazing organizations that you would think would be ready to go with that, but it's just not a systematic rigor process that they have implemented. And account-based marketing is really well suited to structure programs like that, to where you are getting the voice of the customer. And the trend I think that is going to be happening is like, as we start to have all of this, you know, AI start to automate a lot of the mundane tasks for us and maybe other areas of performance marketing, you're going to be left with people. And how are those people engaging and connecting with your customers, your future customers, your best fit customers, et cetera. And I think that that's where we're going to start to be a lot more genuine and authentic and really utilizing the feedback much better.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. You know, one of my fears is, I don't know if fear is the wrong word, but one of the things on my radar is just a battle of the bots, right? So, you know, at some point it's going to be like this AI making ads and all these, you know, bots and spiders of the internet are going to be the ones receiving that ad because they're set up to, I don't know, like pull information like out of it or, you know, different things. And so it'll be so far removed from humans talking to humans that it'll just be an exercise in spend on both mm-hmm. ends. So, you know, making sure that there's those guardrails of, you know, yes, the AI said this, but here's where it was just a little bit off, but I really know our customers. So that one word is really triggering for our ICP. We don't want to use that word. We want to use this word instead. And it may not seem like a big deal to non-marketers or to, you know, certain levels within the same organization, but it can be a big difference from the beginning of the experience of that customer or whether or not they just bounce.
Yeah, 1,000%. And yeah, going back to our earlier conversation, I mean, with so many startups I've been at, I've come in and I've just changed the verbiage and wording just slightly because I realized very quickly how our competition was talking, how our competitors were talking, how we were talking was very centric to how we spoke internally, but made zero sense externally. And yes, that's, you know, you can pull that information from tools, but it's what you do with it. It's what is that output? And I think that we were talking earlier about just account-based marketing too, and how this is becoming more of like a topic again. I think what happened was for the past like 3 or 4 years, you know, everybody and their mother was saying that they did account-based marketing as part of their solution. And it got so convoluted. And what people ended up doing was they ended up saying, getting told like, hey, okay, we need to do account-based marketing this year. We need to move with a, you know, digital first strategy, go forth. And then what people did was they actually went out and they evaluated softwares. Like that was their, you know, main core step to doing ABM. And this, these softwares, like touching on your point about the AI, they're built for a purpose. And the purpose was predominantly to push ads, predominantly display ads. And then maybe there was some data enrichment component to that too. But to your point, just like with AI, that is a tool and a channel and a strategy. Like that is so removed from the original intention of what account-based marketing is supposed to be. And it's unfortunate that so many professionals and organizations kind of jump the gun here about what is the actual, you know, foundations of marketing across the board. And we seek to automate it or have a tool solve all our problems. And it really can't. You still need that level of knowledge and that level of expertise. And we have to stop thinking that, you know, principle equals X, like, or principle equals tool. Like it's a strategy, it's foundations. There's a certain level of like expertise and finesse that you get, but you get that by really knowing and engaging with your customers inside and out, not relying on technology to solve it completely for you.
Yeah. And I mean, I think to that end, there was a lot of shiny toy syndrome, right? Mm-hmm. Which is always going to be the battle because everyone loves shiny things. You know, I'm not going to pretend that I wasn't like, oh, this looks so cool, you know, because everyone's guilty of it. But when the finesse of it, as you said, I think is really where you can tell the difference with how someone interprets their overall macro situation within the context of not just their company, but the landscape at large. Because the way that your use case would be for like shiny tool, because you have this other more like sophisticated perspective and experiences, you're going to use it a way that maybe isn't even on their roadmap. Right. You're going to use it and finesse it. And someone who is, you know, way off in a completely different type of marketing or doesn't have that mindset, doesn't see that picture, they're just going to use it for the base level features, and the features can help a good strategy, but they aren't sufficient to have a strategy that's necessarily effective. It'll get you some wins, but it won't get you all the way to where most companies are trying to go.
Yeah. And it's so much about your saying just makes me just really like ache for some new ways of structuring teams, new ways of like, how are we enabling our individuals at the organization? Because so much of this knowledge of who your customers are, like the product roadmap, you know, the 3-year, 5-year plan for the organization are just gated information inside a lot of companies. And so it's impossible to task, I think, a marketer that doesn't have the wherewithal to, you know, to ask certain questions or to go to for certain information to enable, because again, account-based marketing is really just, it's a go-to-market strategy. It's a way to, it's not even a channel, it's a strategy. You know, there are other things that you could say are channels, like product-led growth is definitely a strategy, but it's also, it can be a channel too, but you have to know that they can coexist as both. And then you have to look at the vendors that are offering that and how are they pitching it? Are they pitching it as a solution or are they thinking of it and pitching it as a strategy? So yeah, there's so much about these concepts that I think that people would grasp and get better if we also just enabled our teams to to have access and visibility to just broader conversations that they should, I think, have information or be involved with so they can best equip themselves to launch these types of programs.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, because it's, you know, back to what you said originally, validation, right? Because if your marketing puts in an Easter egg about a future thing and people glom on it, then like, oh my God, there's pent up demand. We've validated this. Like, we need to put this as a push priority. Or if they start like, you know, talking a lot of shit and they're like, this is dumb. Like, we don't care. Like, you guys need to fix, like, just us being able to log in first. Like, you know, like, get right. better at the basics. So I think including, and selfishly, I'm not good at staying in my own lane. So, like, the more information that I have as a marketer about all of it, the better job I can do to look out for other departments and the bigger picture. So that's my soapbox about getting my grubby little hands on all the information.
I love that. I think it's, I mean, it's definitely not, I subscribe to that too. I don't ever stay in my own lane. And anytime I'm eventually asked to, that's kind of my cue to say goodbye, because that just limits my potential and I know what I can bring to the table. And I really feel for people that feel stuck like that, right? Where they feel like not empowered to ask the hard questions, empowered to challenge the status quo. And it just limits your own growth and your own potential. And I wish we all had more opportunities to feel empowered to ask those questions, because it makes us better marketers. But it also just empowers us to be better employees too.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think that brings to light something that, you know, I think is hard for people in a lot of situations, is having that sense of self-awareness to be like, hey, wait a second, you know, despite these messages I'm getting, I really am capable of X, Y, and Z. And so I would challenge people, myself, all of us, to just think of something that we think we could do and just go do it. And you don't have to do it on like a giant scale. Like, I'm not saying that like we all, you know, try to make the next Amazon or, you know, any of that, but, you know, just be brave. Because having that bravery is the difference between feeling like you're stuck in a dead end job and, you know, having something that feels aligned with your needs.
Yeah. I think if you even have the inkling of something different, I think that that's you tapping into your intuition and your potential. And I think that, you know, whenever I've felt that, whenever I've felt like the need to want to put myself out there to speak at a conference or learn about something new in the business, you know, I've raised my hand to be a seller before, and I've sold deals that I never thought I could sell while still doing my marketing job. I've raised my hand for almost everything that's been provided to me as an opportunity. And it wasn't easy to do it. It was sometimes met with some resistance and some judgment of why am I even asking? But I, at the end of the day, do it because I weigh that opportunity to everything else I've had to face in my life. And the fear level just jumps all the way down, right? I mean, it just doesn't even compare to some of your hardest moments in life about what you could do, you know, at your job, because it's still just a job, right?
Yeah.
But it's still just a job. And, you know, sadly, most organizations really don't care about you. Like, they just don't.
There's a limit to the type of caring that you can expect from a company.
And I don't think we really set people up for what that care really is. I think there's a lot of facade and marketing that we do to make people think that it's a bit more than what it is.
I think that could be a whole episode.
yes.
but yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the themes that I've felt a lot lately, was the idea of like the fairy tales in business. And, you know, we hear, you know, we're raised growing up thinking you have to be so organized or so put together, or real business people do this. And maybe it's our English teachers that said that we had to write 1,000 words for the essays. You know, maybe it starts in school, but where we have this expectation, and, you know, reality and expectation are often not the same. So, you know, there's that, that you get like a little bit more seasoned and you drop some of those expectations.
But never drop your own expectations for what you deserve. Exactly. I mean, yeah, I think that's been my biggest, you know, maybe curse and blessing at the same time. But, you know, others, I have this sticky note right here that tells me others don't define who I am. I know exactly who I am already. So that maybe doesn't tamper my disappointment, but it at least keeps me first and foremost at the front of my life, which I should be, right?
Yeah.
And I severely lack confidence. Like I have so much internal dialogue and chatter that is just awful. But there is this like perseverance of like, I still want to do what's best for me. And the only person that's going to know the answer to that is you. So if you feel that, attempt to go for it, even if the outcome isn't what you had hoped.
Yeah. And I mean, to kind of bring us back to marketing, because this could be like a whole,
sure.
I relate to that so strongly. And you know, I was like, okay, Leanne, this is not a therapy session. This is a podcast. but you know, when we show up as people that are safeguarding our own existence and our own potential and ourselves, we can then be a better agent within our professional life. Because if you let yourself go to shit, and that's the second time I've cussed during this, so you know, everyone here's a grown up. Everyone here's a grown up. but if you let yourself unravel, and maybe it's not let yourself, but if you're unraveling for whatever reason, it impacts your ability at work. And there are seasons where sometimes things happen and you have to be a little unraveled. And you just do your best and you show up and you keep showing up, and that's what it takes. But in the seasons where things are a little bit more forgiving and you have the opportunity to focus or to go full blast or do a sprint professionally, that's what you deserve. Then go for it. You know, it's defining what good looks like every day. And that might be a different definition on a day when you have the flu or a day where you've had a whole pot of coffee. You know, there's ebbs and flows. But it allows you to then show up genuinely to your job, and it allows you to then genuinely look out for the interests of the company and the client you're trying to serve, which, you know, sounds like some pretty kick-ass strategy.
Yeah, definitely.
So that was a long monologue. Thank you. Thank you for letting me do that.
No, thank you for letting me have a sidebar.
So kind of, like when you think about everything, like from what you're doing, do you kind of see the future of marketing going in one way or another? And do you think that where it should go and where it is going are the same place?
I do. I really am. I'm hopeful for this trend of with marketing being more integrated and interwoven with customer interactions. I've been at too many organizations where marketing doesn't even speak to a customer, maybe unless they've been at the company for 3 years and they're of a certain level, and it's time to interview them for the case study, like who knows. But I've just never taken that approach. To me, like networking and relationship building is just fundamental to marketing. It's how I learn. It's how I better serve. It's how I better communicate a message. And I do think that more individuals, even at as high as, you know, chief marketing officers, are feeling more empowered to actually have those relationships with prospects, with customers, because so much focus is being taken away from a lot of the mundane tasks. I think, you know, as marketers, we've been stuck in spreadsheets and just, you know, ROI calculations for years, and it's left us to really focus just on more of the output versus the input. And I think the input matters for the output. So when I say that, like, I think that we've kind of just been stuck in creating tactics for tactics' sake in order to drive up some numbers, not even revenue numbers, but just vanity metrics a lot of times. And I think that we're really honing in on as a society, but especially in B2B, the importance of relationship marketing. And I think we're seeing that with the rise of like influencer marketing in B2B. And, you know, I hear more people talking about customer advocacy programs, and I'm hearing more about retention versus acquisition. And there's just, again, narrowing that focus on serving the right fit people versus just the entire world. And I think that that's only going to yield better benefits for clients. And I think just make marketers even more honed into their craft.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love it if more CMOs were talking to customers.
They really aren't.
But they're the number one person who should be, right?
Yeah.
Because the buck stops with them, right? If your job is dependent on how well your team embodies what customers want, you should probably be talking to the customers to, like, you know, have some proof, some validation there.
It's kind of why I, for the longest time, when I would get, you know, recruited to, or when I was interviewing, it would always be like, well, you should be like, when are you ready? When do you want to be a CMO? And like, what does that track look like for you? How do you want to get there? I'm like, I don't want to be a CMO because I've seen what the modern day CMO is tasked with. And it's very much, I would say, operational. There is a lot of, you know, board shenanigans is what I'll just say. And it's taken away from the craft of marketing, which I love, which is, how do you create like a compelling narrative that resonates? How do you create a compelling narrative that, you know, drives business value? Like, that is not what the modern day CMO is really, in my opinion, is really tasked with anymore. And so I've created my own path for what elevating my career would look like. And it just, because I didn't subscribe to the modern day marketing progression in your career.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that with the way that 2023 has gone, that a lot of people are just kind of not drinking the Kool-Aid. And, you know, maybe they were lifelong Kool-Aid drinkers, but, you know, this year has really been like a hold on, like, I don't know if that's right kind of year. Mm-hmm. And I hope that that means that there'll be some adjustments in expectations and tasks and how it's done. But maybe it's also room for just redefining like a fractional CMO or a full-time CMO and really just doing what it should be done with it. All right. I've got a big question for you. I'm gonna take a sip of water first. I know I'm getting.
Okay. I'll join you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So along the lines of everything we've talked about, or even outside of bounds, what is the question someone should ask you, but they just don't? It's just not on their radar for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think that kind of the theme here where we just left off too is, I don't think people ask me enough, like, what does success look like to me? I think that maybe they see what success should be and maybe use my resume, my profile as like a template for that. But really redefining what success looks like, I don't feel like I get asked what that is. I feel like there is an expectation of what it should be. And I feel like if more people did ask me that, or others that, it would help to us as a society to have more productive conversations about how we should be thinking about what success is. And I think that it's a little bit unique for somebody too that maybe is of my age and has my experience, but just my model of life does not look like what most people, women my age, looks like, I think is also like a talking point that would be interesting to have more people chat with me about.
Yeah. I mean, I think that asking what success looks like is so huge about, like, for anyone. But would you indulge us and just share with us maybe what one area of success will look like for you?
Yeah, I think that, you know, this has been an interesting year for me. It's been the year where I've had the most balance in my life. And I thought for a little bit that it was just like in a couple of years, I hadn't had solid balance, but I realized that it's my life that I have had. This is the most balance I've ever had in my life. And a lot of it was because I had to ask myself that question. Like, what is success really like for me? Because I would find myself in positions and places in life where I questioned that my initial view of success and how I felt in it. Like, how did I feel intuitively? Like, when I was in those positions, in those rooms, in the proverbial rooms, and it was conflicting with what I thought it should be. And so that was my cue to like revisit that. And for me, I think success looks like peace and confidence and trusting my intuition and not planning the next 10 years, not planning maybe the next 5 or the next 5 minutes from now, but operating in a way that feels a lot more natural to my body, my mind, rather than trying to subscribe to a lot of ways that I've always subscribed to as what success would be.
Awesome. I love it. You know, I definitely relate so strongly. I'm not gonna share all of my stories where but I think one of the key things about finding success for yourself is the same as marketing, is finding out what you're gonna say no to and who you're gonna say no to, and being okay with saying no to it, and saying yes by saying no.
I love your framing of that, because I think there's this like thing in my mind where it's like, yes, I want to say no, right? But then I also want to say yes, because I love learning and growing. But saying no is a way of saying yes.
Yeah, it's saying yes to the path that you're trying to go on. When you say no to the distractions or the like pressures or, you know, whatever it may be, saying no is our biggest superpower that we can have.
Yeah, and I mean, you're dead on it, that saying no in marketing is just fundamental. I think you cannot continue to innovate and create if your brain doesn't even have the capacity, time, bandwidth to do that. But I think we try to be everywhere at once, and we try to beat everybody to be at that place, right? Like, we try to be the first, and we try to be the best, and we try to do that for all things, and it's not sustainable. I think this year has shown that too. So I do think that we're going to hopefully start to refine all of our marketing practices a bit more.
Yeah, get off the task hamster wheel, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
At some point, saying no to like revising something that was working just fine is okay to say no. Like, it's
amen.
Working. It's working. Like, it can work for another week. Like, we don't. If it's working, it'll work for another week. 100%. But we're kind of running out of time. I wanted to just, you know, give space. If someone wants to connect with you, or if you have anywhere where someone should really be paying attention, what does that look like?
Yeah, I'm actually saying no to a lot of social media platforms lately. So the way you can reach me is LinkedIn. So I am saying yes to LinkedIn and saying no to a lot of others. It's helping me with focus. And I feel like what I'm trying to do in marketing, it's best suited there. So please reach out to me. Always love to have conversations. Yeah, that would be the best place.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. If anyone has any questions for me, the best way to get a hold of me is on LinkedIn or info@markigy.com. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you for joining me, Karina. And have a great day, everyone.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Markigy, the Science of Marketing Strategy. If any of the strategies we talked about today inspired you to learn more, try them. Remember, the perfect strategy doesn't exist, only the one that gets done. Subscribe to our show on your favorite podcast player to make sure that you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening. Until next time.